Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. It's peak tourism season. That means thousands of visitors on and around Native land, along with the benefits of economic development and a broader awareness of Native issues. There is the potential for less desirable behavior. Not all visitors follow rules, and some even cause damage to important places. Coming up, we'll hear about ways to guard against tourists who might otherwise ruin the experience for everyone. Join us for this discussion right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The mayor of Hawaii County says he's hopeful for peaceful resolution and conflicts over construction of the 30-meter telescope on Mauna Kea. Mayor Harry Kim held a press conference Monday to discuss efforts between the state and demonstrators blocking access to the summit of Mauna Kea, which is now in the 16th day. During the press conference streamed by Big Island Video News, Kim talked about a meeting he hosted Friday with the Native Hawaiian community.
And I decided I need to call together leaders of the Hawaiian community to seek guidance, to seek wisdom, and understand perspectives of the issues of Mauna Kea.
Kim was asked by Hawaii Governor David Ige to lead communication and coordination efforts between the state demonstrators and the greater community. Kim says he's trying to work with all concerned parties. He added there are plans this week for the area, which include inserting traffic lights at the intersection where demonstrations are taking place, pointing to safety concerns. Meanwhile, leaders of the demonstration have been holding their own daily updates on social media, maintaining their opposition of the project and vowing to protect the area they hold sacred. Tribal leaders, public safety, and emergency management officers are gathered in New Mexico this week to discuss emergency alerts on tribal lands. They're focusing on implementing the Ashland Mike Amber Alert in Indian Country Act. The 2018 law provides funding and resources to integrate state and regional alerts with tribes. It's named after Ashland Mike, an 11-year-old Navajo girl who was kidnapped and murdered on the Navajo Nation. Her death prompted her family and policymakers to call for improved technology and the creation of emergency alerts, especially in rural areas. Ashland's mother, Pamela Foster, will address the symposium Tuesday, as well as tribal, state, and federal officials. The Indian Country Amber Alert Symposium wraps up Thursday in Albuquerque. The Shoshone Bannock tribes are asking state lawmakers to stop Idaho public schools from using Indian mascots. The Idaho Statesman reports the tribes reportedly sent a letter to the state education board asking the board to ban Indian mascots. The tribes say a number of mascots in schools around the state are offensive. Recently, the Teton School District retired its Indian mascot, while the Nez Perce tribe also has weighed in, asking for the end of offensive mascots. In Madison, Wisconsin, the school board Monday called for the end of Indian mascots. The Wisconsin State Journal reports the board passed a resolution seeking legislation to end the use of Native American nicknames and logos found offensive. About 31 Wisconsin school districts have Indian mascots, logos, or names. Other school districts are reportedly examining similar resolutions to be submitted to the Wisconsin Association of School Boards with the goal of a vote at the association's annual conference in January. A missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls healing, education, art, and activism event is planned to be held in New Mexico in August. Organizer Christina Castro with Three Sisters Collective says the event will include the release of the CD Spirit Line, a compilation of voices in Indian country.
So there's music, there's spoken word, there's excerpts of interviews that with various people who are involved in the movement. So we're going to basically press that CD, make a select number of copies. We're going to have it, we'll highlight those performers in the CD, and all the proceeds are going to go to the Sovereign Bodies Institute.
The Sovereign Bodies Institute is tracking missing and murdered Indigenous women cases in the U.S. The event will be held at the Santa Fe Indian Center on August 16th. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
The National Indian Education Association is celebrating 50 years of building education nations, October 8th through the 12th at the Minneapolis Convention Center. Early bird registration ends July 12th at niea.org. Proud to support this show. Support by the Wheelwright Museum, New Mexico's oldest nonprofit independent museum. The Wheelwright presents exhibitions of contemporary and iconic Native art, and there is no charge for Native visitors. Info at wheelwright.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Tourists on tribal lands is somewhat of a sweet and sour experience for different members of different tribes. While there are visitors that seem to be like kin and enter tribal lands with respect and reverence for what is sacred, there are others. And as we've heard from tribal members, some visitors are just downright rude and seem to think tribal communities are a place to do whatever you please. And there are tourists who don't bother to learn about tribal customs or wishes before visiting. Other times, some tourists are taking things from natural landscapes, or worse, they're desecrating important spaces. Here's one scenario. The Navajo Nation has had to specifically ask visitors to stop spreading cremated human remains in the picturesque Monument Valley and other places. Disrespect of Native traditions and people extends to ancestral places that rest beyond a tribe's reservation boundary, like Bear's Ears. And in places like this, it's been reported that visitors deface areas, remove pottery shards, and even leave trash. So what is a tribal nation to do when these things occur? In the next hour, we'll talk about this as well as open the discussion on how to be a good visitor on Native lands. You're welcome to chime in, too. What kind of disrespectful tourist behavior have you witnessed in your own Native community? You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And right now, we go to Sherry Rupert. She is the Executive Director of the American Indian Alaska Native Tourism Association. She is enrolled in the Benton Paiute Tribe. Our pleasure to have her here. Sherry, welcome.
Thank you.
And so, Sherry, let's start with this. How important is tourism to Native America?
Well, tourism is a part of economic development. And, I've been involved in tourism for quite some time now, and it's an opportunity for tribes to participate really on a global level of educating visitors about who they are on their own terms and from their perspective.
And so when tourists don't, as some would say, behave themselves, how does it affect tourism?
Well, I think, for tourism to succeed in a tribal community, there has to be investment and buy-in from the whole of the community. So when we get visitors that are disrespectful in some regard, then that makes it hard on the whole community. And you may get some of the community that doesn't want to participate anymore.
And so what are some examples of this when we say behaving badly or not behaving? Go ahead.
Sure. I mean, I hail from the state of Nevada, and one of the instances that comes to my mind is out at the Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe. They have a beautiful reservation with a beautiful lake and some tufa rock formations that are integral to their culture and their history, and they've had to close a portion of that area off because of tagging that was going on the tufa rock formations. People were having bonfires out there and leaving their trash behind. So it's things like that I think that the tribes view as disrespectful.
And how does that affect the community?
I think it makes the community think that maybe tourism isn't a good thing for them. But I'm always talking about how you can manage tourism. You can, instead of opening up sacred places to your tribe, you can allow people there at a certain time, maybe with a tribal tour guide along with them.
And so when it does get to that point where a community is saying, all right, that's it, no more push for tourism, what do you think about that? Knowing how beneficial you've seen it across the nations, what do you think if a tribe were ever, or a community, part of a community, were to decide we're closing our doors, what happens?
Well, I think that is up to the tribe. You know, if that's a decision that they've made, then that's the decision that should stand. They're tribal, they're sovereign nations, and so they have the ability to say whether they're going to participate or not.
But what is being missed out in saying, you know, we're not going to venture into this? Are we talking dollars, the ability of people to understand more about your community? Are any of those, do any of those things fade away?
Well, yeah, of course. You know, tourism provides the opportunity for a tribe to share their culture, to share their history, even to perpetuate their culture through, you know, teaching their own people who teach others, who teach the visitors. And then there's always the economics of it, right? You have new dollars coming in from other sources, from those visitors, that could potentially impact the tribe both positively and negatively. If the revenue's coming in, of course, it's going to help the tribe. And if it's not coming in, then the tribe can't use it to potentially further some of their programs.
And so how does it work, especially tribes working together with law enforcement to maybe even police tourists on lands there in the community, and maybe just even thoughts of people who are visiting our communities, you know, who's policing them or making sure that they're staying in line? Anything there, Sherry?
Well, of course, you know, if there are visitors coming onto tribal lands, it is the tribal law enforcement that is responsible, and that can be a drain on, you know, the economy of the tribe. And so I think it's really important to have that educational piece out to the traveling public, whether that's, you know, through social media or on your website, whether it's signage that's posted on tribal lands, to educate the traveling public that, you know, they need to respect these lands. They need to pick up after themselves and not leave trash behind. Those types of things, I think, can be helpful.
All right. Thank you for that. Sherry Rupert is here with us today from Ayenta. Any thoughts about visitors coming to our Native nations? Any experiences where it wasn't so good? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Sherry, have you ever seen tribes struggling to keep tourists in line?
Well, again, you know, that example that I used with the Pyramid Lake Paiute tribe, you know, just making sure that people understand that they are on tribal lands, that there are certain protocols and permits that need to be purchased before going there. I think if you're a responsible traveler, you'll do your research and before you even get to the destination.
And so we know that there are places that are important to tribes that go beyond the boundaries of their reservation, that are ancestral lands. Any thoughts on, you know, some of these spaces being not used in proper ways, or disrespect going on in different places? And of course, when we think of Bears Ears, we've heard a lot of this, and some of the push on why people want to keep it within boundaries where tribal people can connect to. Sherry, anything there?
Well, again, I think that, you know, every place is different. The tribes have different protocols and sites that are sacred to them. And I think that those sites, if, you know, they don't want people there, then, you know, they have the ability to not share those places.
And so what is your advice to tourists who are looking to visit Native lands and communities?
Well, I think it's a great opportunity for people to learn where that, you know, the 573 federally recognized tribes across the nation are different. They have different landscapes. They have a different culture, different languages. And so I see tourism as an opportunity for those travelers to be able to learn. And I think that as travelers, when we go new places, we have to keep an open mind and be open to new things and new cultures and be able to respect that.
And so would you say, is there a wrong reason to visit a Native community?
A wrong reason? You know, I don't know that there's a wrong reason to visit. I think that if somebody's looking to visit tribal communities, that they have an interest in learning about those people and those areas.
All right, thank you for that. And so on the line with us today is Sherry Rupert. She is the Executive Director of the American Indian Alaska Native Tourism Association. And full disclosure, IANTA has been an underwriter of our program, Native America Calling, in the past. But if you have questions for Sherry, any thoughts, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And I know IANTA does a lot of work in educating Native communities about tourism. And this is a different side. You know, we don't always get to talk about some of these things, about when things kind of go sour and how it affects our tribal community. Maybe there's something you'd like to share about this. You can give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And if there are people who are listening who may be visiting your community for some reason, maybe there is a natural landscape that many people flock to, anything that you wish you could ever tell people who were visiting, call us right now, share your thoughts. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And maybe you have plans to go to a tribal community, but you don't know where to start. You have questions on, okay, you want to be responsible about this, but where do you check in? Got any questions on that? Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to your calls, your questions, and we're waiting for your stories too. Give us a ring. Don't wait till the end of the hour. There's plenty of time right now. Go ahead, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is our number. We're live. The Navajo Nation is looking into unused TV signals to increase broadband access for residents. Some other tribes are combining forces and utilizing public-private partnerships. On the next Native America Calling, we'll go live from the Rural Networks Conference in New Mexico to learn how tribes are expanding their telecommunications operations.
Support for this program provided by the American Indian Higher Education Consortium, the collective spirit and unifying voice of 37 tribal colleges and universities. For over 30 years, AHEC has worked to ensure that tribal sovereignty is recognized and respected, and that tribal colleges and universities are included in this nation's higher education system. Information on a tribal college or university near you at AIHEC.org.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we are talking about tourists on Native lands. Are there some places in your Native community that are off limits to tourists? Why? Or are there special occasions when visitors are not welcome? And has your tribe ever put something out there, the tribe's wishes on how to treat the land or where visitors can go? Has it ever been violated? What kind of message does that send to you? Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Thanks again to Sherry Rupert from Ayenta, who's also here with us. We now go to Billings, Montana, to say hello to Sarah Matthewen. She is the owner of Go Native America. It's our pleasure to have her here. Sarah, welcome.
Hey, Tara.
And Sarah, anything to add here about when things go badly? Is there anything you've ever seen that made you want to participate in a conversation like this to maybe prevent something like that happening again?
You know, I've had my company running for about 24 years now, so I've seen quite a lot of things over the years. And, you know, when you ask Sherry, is there ever a wrong reason for people to come into Native places? At first I thought, I wouldn't like to answer that. But actually, you know, there is. People come in and they are coming to thieve things. Like, you know, you see petroglyphs that have been chipped off of a wall, or, you know, people are coming in for willful cultural appropriation. They're coming in because they think that they can run their own ceremonies and that kind of thing. Or then maybe, you know, for example, up at Mato Tapila, Bears Lodge, and people call it Devil's Tower. People go rock climbing there, and it's a sacred place. They don't go doing that in, you know, the churches of Europe, but they do it right there. On that sacred rock. I think there's quite a few things that they don't sit well with a lot of Native people. And I think that, you know, when you work within tourism, you kind of have a responsibility to try and educate people before they ever get there.
And where do you think that education should start?
I think that as soon as people start asking about coming into Native America, you know, there's gentle ways to make sure that you're educating people. My company, we have a document that we send out to people saying, please read this. Don't come until you've read it. You know, and it works. You know, we just educate them before they get here.
And so where should tourists be going to get some of this? I know that you provide this as people go, but any other resources out there that you think are good read or visit this site to learn more before you go somewhere? Go ahead.
I think that quite a few Native sites actually have their own rules and regulations very well posted. I mean, you go up to the Hopi reservations, up on the Hopi mesas, you know, in the villages, they all have signage there. They're very clear about what's acceptable and what isn't. You know, in the Navajo Nation, they do a great job down there with, you know, that they have their own rules about who can go out guiding in different places and, you know, where people have to go accompanied and where they can't go solo. You know, and I think when a nation takes charge of its own sites, that's fabulous. But then you also have other sites that are out of the purview, I guess, of the tribe. I mean, you know, you look around Yellowstone National Park, you have 26 associated tribes with Yellowstone, and very little signage or information for people. And you have, like, I think it's about 4 million visitors a year who are walking right through, you know, sacred sites, cultural sites, and they just totally miss it. They don't even know it's there. You know, there's nothing there to explain it to them. I think it would be really cool if the national parks and the state parks, in some cases, were a little bit more, I guess, open to the tribes in terms of asking for their input and helping them to understand, you know, what it is that they should be telling visitors.
And I turn to Sherry for that. What do you think of Sarah's idea about that?
Well, I think it's a great idea, Sarah. So the IANTA has been working with the National Park Service to actually do more of that, to do more collaboration with the tribes that at one time were within the park and have since been removed, for them to work closely together and bring a better understanding of that area. We've done some great work at the Grand Canyon National Park. We played a role in the renovation of the Desert View Watchtower area and have helped in the expansion of the facility's cultural demonstration series and interpretation of that area by the tribes that live there.
And so, Sherry, you know, there are places where some of this work has been done, but what about the places where it hasn't and collaborations haven't happened and people are looking at this structure there in Wyoming and they have no idea that it is connected to, you know, Native communities? Before they go, I'm sure there are places, but what about people who are never informed? And if a park isn't behind it and doing education, where can people, get knowledge on it? Or should everyone just understand everywhere is Native land, therefore everything is sacred?
Well, I think that, we can continue to build those partnerships with those areas, with those parks and between the tribes there. We intend to further our work in that area. Another place that people can look as well is we have a destination website, NativeAmerica.travel, and we have invited tribes to participate on this website, whether they're tourism or not. As I said before, it's their choice, and so they have the ability to go to this website and populate it with their information, and they can even put on there, we don't do tourism, but they can also include information on their tribe. The website also allows for us to put information in there about, do's and don'ts while visiting, and allows the visitors to tribal lands to come there and learn more, and then also to learn more about the areas and tribes in which that they're going to be visiting.
All right. Thank you for that. Let's go ahead and take a call again if you want to join us. 1-800-996-2848. Let's say hi to Glenn in Jemez Springs, New Mexico. Tuned in on KUNM. Glenn, thanks for calling. You're on air.
Yeah, I'd just like to invite people to come up to Jemez Pueblo this Friday, the 2nd of August. It's the feast day, and if people have never been there, it's a fabulous experience. Coming at 11 and probably able to stay until 4. And then secondly, I live in Jemez Springs, 10 miles north, and there we have the Jemez Historic Site, the remains of a beautiful church that Jemez women and children built. And it's guided tour kind of thing and a beautiful opportunity to see something from the past.
And so, Glenn, are you inviting everybody to your house for feast day?
Well, of course. No, I'm not Jemez Pueblo. My wife works there, but so many people do open up their doors and just lavish us with a full course meal if you want to do that. So,
and Glenn, are there any things that you've been taught about proper ways that of attending this? And since you're putting that invitation out there, any thoughts on how to be? Because I know you don't just go there and walk in any house.
That is correct. And so no cell phones, no cameras, total respect. If you go into the little area down at the very end of where the dancers are, you can put money in a plate there in honor of some of the saints that they have. I would say as you enter homes, you'll be asked to sit and wait your turn to go to the table and eat. So respect is the component for coming to Jemez Pueblo.
All right, Glenn, thank you for your call. What are your thoughts? 1-800-996-2848. Sarah, to curb some of this, what do you feel are the solutions to curb bad tourist behavior?
Education, all the way along. You know, when when people start talking about coming to Native America, there are lots of resources online for them to see. And when they get here, I think that there are so many people who are able to explain to visitors what's right and what's wrong. And tribes, if they know that they've got visitors coming in, they can put up signage and people can just explain what it is that they expect. I don't think that the people who come in, I think it's a very small minority who are willfully bad, you know. Most people are trying to learn and most people are trying to come in with respect. And I'm not saying they get it right all the time. For sure they don't. We've had some sometimes funny and sometimes just awful examples of people coming in and getting it completely wrong, but they don't do it on purpose all the time, you know. I mean, littering, that kind of stuff, that's, I mean, everybody knows not to do that, and they just go ahead and do it if they want to. But when it comes to respecting places and people, for the large part, I find that most people want to do that. They just don't necessarily know how.
All right. Thank you for that. And again, if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848. Let's take a call. We have Arlo in Rapid City, South Dakota, tuned in. Thanks for giving us a ring, Arlo. You're on air.
Hey, Tara. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, one of the things I wanted to comment on is if you have a famous landmark within your reservation, is making sure that your tribe knows about what media entities are saying about it. Because, for example, we have TripAdvisor, and they have made, like, right now I'm looking at 148 comments and ratings for Wounded Knee. And our tribe doesn't have a tourism department. So if you go to TripAdvisor, though, you can get anywhere from a 1 to 5-star rating and a review. And right now I'm looking at 148 pictures of a place that we hold very sacred to us. And I can look at all their reviews, all their photos, all their vacation photos. And I think it's just the weirdest thing ever. So make sure you know about your historical landmarks.
I can see how that would raise concerns. And Arlo, any thoughts on especially some of those places and people going and taking, you know, selfies or using perspective to kind of squish something in their fingers or hold it there or doing, you know, not good poses in front of sacred places? What's your warning or thoughts or anything there, Arlo?
I mean, that's sad. I mean, if somebody's got to go there to take a selfie and almost say, I care about this by taking a selfie, it's almost like you're putting yourself, you're trying to associate what our ancestors died for. And it's like, that's not fair. That's awful. You're digging our grave deeper by doing crap like that. It's awful.
All right, Arlo, great to hear from you. Thank you for your call there in Rapid City, South Dakota. Your thoughts, 1-800-996-2848. And right now, we're going to say hello to Mona Olivas Tucker. She is the tribal chair for the Yaktichu Yaktel Hini, Northern Chumash Tribe of San Obispo County and Region. And she's a member of the tribe. Our pleasure to have you here. Mona, thank you for being with us.
Hachu Misa Saksi. Hello, my friends, and thank you for the invitation. I'm already learning some good ideas and new ideas, so I appreciate the callers and the other guests.
And what are your thoughts hearing all of these things and maybe even relating it to your own community?
Well, there are a lot of California tribes who are landless, and we're among the landless tribes. So we're not able to build a fence or close a gate to keep people away from our important sites. We have to interact with many government agencies, whether it be Bureau of Land Management, private corporations, state parks, county parks. There's a national refuge in our area. We're also have a large tourist industry in our community, probably in the range of, I'll say, $1.5 billion to $2 billion annually. It's a large income resource, economic resource in our county. So with that means there's a lot of people who come to our county. A lot of the places that they like to visit are important to us. And our membership, I mean, I represent membership comprised of families who've lived in this one area. Our ancestry dates back to this one area for well over 10,000 years. And I'm sure that that's a number that many tribes share in their homelands, too. So our connection here is deep, and we love our homeland. But we are forced to share sacred sites because they are also, for other reasons, tourist attractions, because our sacred sites are important places, are among some of the most beautiful places in our county. And, you know, we're on the western edge of the continent, and we have probably, I'm going to say, 100 miles of coastline. Most of it is accessible by the public. Some of it is private and isn't accessible. And the sacred sites along that coastline and inland, there's a large number, and our ability to protect them, and we have a hard time. And we try to impart information to all of the municipalities, all of the government agencies, you know, to help us protect the sites. In some cases, we get very good cooperation. I'd like to suggest to the people who are listening to this, whether you're a parent or a teacher or a docent or whatever you may be doing, or in regards to being able to instruct young people, or if you're visiting to instruct maybe your co-tourist, to leave things alone. Just don't touch it. Don't pick up anything. I don't care if it's a twig or a rock or a pebble. Leave things alone. Please don't bring spray paint along with you, and don't bring a chipping hammer to take home a little piece of rock, of which, you know, you won't be interested in probably 6 weeks from now. And once those places are damaged, they're damaged forever. They're not replaceable. And so just leave those alone. Just walk softly. Take care of places as you would take care of your own home. You don't want somebody going there and breaking things and throwing trash on your lawn. And, you know, we don't want those things here either.
All right. Thank you for that, Chairwoman Tucker. We'll continue with this conversation. Again, if you'd like to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Maybe you have an account. Have you seen tourists acting badly in your native community? Maybe even cause damage to sites. And much like we just heard Chairwoman talk about defacing certain places, you know, how does that affect your community? How does that affect the history of your tribe? Call us right now. Phone lines are open. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And of course, if you had advice on being a good visitor, call in and share. Phone lines are open.
Support for journalism that raises the awareness of child well-being to citizens and to policymakers provided by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, building a brighter future for children, families, and communities. Information at aecf.org. Support by the Sisseton, Wahpeton, Oyate Tribes, Dakota Western Corporation, and SWO Plastics. Commercial strength trash bags from 3 to 65 gallons for industrial use by casinos, the IHS, and more. DakotaWesternCorp.com.
Hey, 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 hey
You're connected to Native America Calling. I'm your host, Tara Gatewood, and today we are talking about how to be a good tourist on Native lands and what kind of rules should tourists follow when they're visiting your Native community. There's still time to join the conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-996-2848. I turn back to Chairwoman Mona Olivas Tucker. She is the tribal chair of the Yaktichu, Yaktelhini, Chumash Tribe, or Northern Chumash Tribe of San Luis Obispo County in region. And Chairwoman, just want to get your thoughts further, or if there are other examples that you'd like to share, or how it feels when things are defaced.
Well, it breaks your heart, and not just for the indigenous people, but for many people who do have respect for our culture, and they don't want to see these things destroyed. And to reiterate that they're not replaceable. You can't recreate something that took place thousands of years ago. So just leave things alone. Come and look if it's available for you to do that, because some things are on private property. But just look and don't take things, don't deface it. And why you would in the first place, I really don't understand why you would in the first place, but you know, help people understand why not to do that. If you're a person who does do that, stop and think, why? Why would you do that? And to just leave things alone.
And are there particular times of the year when you see tourists flood in?
Sure. You know, we're on the coast of California, and our weather here is very mild and temperate in the coastal areas. It does get warmer inland. But a lot of people come to this part of California to visit or as tourists. 3-day weekends can bring in an extra 40 or 50,000 people, depending on the weekend. And a lot of these people love it here too, and have been coming here for generations to visit. They may live in an area where it's 115, and they'd rather be here where it's 67 degrees. But a lot of people come and leave a lot of trash behind. The beaches after a 3-day weekend can be littered with trash, and public groups or community groups and county parks, you know, they bring in a large crew. And it's pretty senseless that they would do that to the pristine beaches that we have here along our coastline. You know, I don't understand why anyone would do that. Certainly, they don't want me to bring my trash bag and dump it in their lawn, and so we'd prefer that they not do that. And it is a huge demonstration of disrespect for that beach, for that place, and for the indigenous people who are from there, and just for the community, for the all people that live here. Take your trash with you. It's not that hard to do.
All right. Thank you for that, Tribal Chairwoman. Again, you want to join us? Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. We now go to Aaron in the Navajo Nation giving us a ring. Aaron, thank you for calling. You're on air.
All right. Thank you very much. Yeah, about the tourism issue, I see a lot of it here, and I've grown up around different things going on, protecting our own sacred sites around my place where I grow up. My relatives always warning us about the anthropologists coming in and taking our family's bones, taking pottery. So we always watch out for like suspicious vehicles driving around on where those things are. And besides that, like the alcoholism is a big issue. I think a lot of these tourists come through their reservation, the Navajo Nation. They go between like the Grand Canyon, big spot, the Page, big spot, and the Monument Valley. And those three places are a really big center for tourism. And so everything, I think tourism can lead to like missing indigenous women. I think that's kind of a possibility as well with alcoholism. 50% of those tourism are probably.
Oh, Aaron, I'm sorry you're breaking up, but I hear you. Thank you for your call there on the Navajo Nation. You know what? We're going to stay on Navajo Nation. We're going to Window Rock, Arizona now to say hello to Louise Sinajini, the media representative for the Navajo Parks and Recreation. She is Navajo. Our pleasure to have her here. And Louise, feel free to further introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Louise Sinajini. Sinajini is a total revenge position. My desk is the J.R.O. Sinajini. I'm the
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Louise. Of course, when I'm speaking, I do have to introduce my clan. So good afternoon.
And Louise, we just heard from a voice out of the Navajo Nation. I'm curious, what else is going on? What do you feel is the biggest problem you have with tourists coming to visit the Navajo Nation?
I agree with all Sherry and Mona that it's so nicely. We do get a lot of people bringing in, of course, want to come in and then just throw ashes out, but we tell them, you know, we, as Navajos, you know, we don't allow this. Not only will not only do we feel it'll affect us later, we feel that, you know, when you do throw ashes out, the only thing that we can do is go over there, sweep it up, and put it in the trash. Now, I don't think that's what their intentions were. I don't think that's what they would like to see happen. So we ask everybody not to bring any ashes onto the reservation at all. That is taboo for us Navajo. We do not want that on our land at all.
And so what are some of the tourist hotspots where people go, and anything you'd like to say about how to conduct themselves?
Our major spots are Monument Valley and Antelope Canyon. So we do get a lot of travelers through there, and of course the Four Corners. And these people say, you know, well, we have loved ones, you know, that wanted their ashes put here, and we're like, no, you can't do that, you know. To us, it's a taboo. So if you could, you know, put it somewhere else, take it back with you, what have you. So we do try and, you know, push that sense, but we do still get people coming in, and when they see, like, one of our non-Native friends come out and sweep it up for us, then they can turn, you know, get mad at us because we're sweeping up what they put out. So yeah, it's really hard to, you know, it's like we feel the same way that they feel when they're picking it up and putting it in the trash. Basically, the same way they're desecrating it and then putting it on our land.
And so that's kind of a different issue, too, of tourists, because when, you know, people are on vacation, a lot of times they're coming to come and see. And what you're describing is something really specific. And I think, you know, just understanding where the Navajo Nation stands on this is important. And, you know, if you have thoughts on this, maybe you didn't consider some of the things you just heard. You can even share your thoughts, too. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And so, Louise, tell me a little bit about people who are coming just as visitors. And you know, are there moments where you cringed and you saw something happen, or you saw the acts of tourists putting people in danger or putting tradition in danger?
For me, it's like what Mona said, is leaving trash behind. We do have trails in these areas, and when people go hiking, they leave their Gatorade bottle or they leave, you know, something behind. And then, you know, when we go hike up and we clean these things, you know, we're bringing down not only the trash, but then we're also, you know, we have to bring all of it back down so that, you know, when somebody else goes back up there, they don't see this stuff. So for us, it's beautification, cleansiness. We do try to keep things beautiful so that they can see it. You know, for us, it's about living the Hajjon. So that means, you know, we walk in beauty, we see in beauty all around us. That in alone, having that cultural aspect of what we do, you know, we try to present that to all our tourists that come in. You know, we do try to walk in beauty, and if you could assist us, you know, that would be great. And then along with writing on the walls, we ask that people do not write on the walls, don't etch your name. We get a lot of, you know, I was here, or I was here on this day, and it's etched in the rock to where you can't take it out. So it stays there. And if there's a petroglyph nearby, you know, then it ruins and it defaces that petroglyph.
And, Louise, could you just state a little bit about why these petroglyphs need to remain where they are?
Actually, they're part of our story, what was left behind from our elders that were here back then. So in some areas, they tell stories. They have different meanings in different areas. So when, you know, let's say some families were around who had horses and horses were herding, it's still in some areas that you can see the horses where you can actually view some birds or maybe chickens on the wall, and they tell you what was there before. So it's not only there as a history lesson, but it's also there to show, you know, that they is Native, and that Native Americans have been there longer than, you know. So that's why it's so, to me, so precious to protect. And not only protect, preserve these things so that people in the future, our children, are able to see these things.
And Louise, what about residents? Are there any places where people struggle with tourist interactions?
Yes. Actually, most of our places do have people living there. We do have, such as Monument Valley, we do have some local tour guides that live in the area, and they try to block off their area so tourists don't go through there. So there is a loop road and a road that's actually specified to drive down and what have you. And then we do get people, you know, going the wrong way or, you know, wanting to go off-road. We try to keep them on the main road and tell them no off-roading. And they're like, well, you know, there's only a little house there and nobody seems to be home, so can I go that way? And we do have signs up that say, no, you can't go this way, but they still tend to go that way. And, you know, people call us and say, hey, so-and-so is driving around over here. Can you get them out of here? So it's a lot of that. And then there are some areas that are usually closed so it can replenish, so the earth can renew. And when those areas are closed, we do have some people, you know, wanting to go back there, and they're like, well, you know, we paid to get in, and I want to go that way too. And we do try and tell them, you know, that's closed off so it can replenish. So when you come back next year, you know, you may be able to go on that side, and then maybe the other side will be closed. It's just about the protection and the preservation of the land.
And Louise, are there any just base rules you'd like to share with our listeners about visiting the Navajo Nation?
Most definitely. Pack in and pack out. I can't stress that enough. Whatever you bring in, please take out. And then, like Sherry said earlier, you know, do your homework before you arrive. We do get people saying, well, I would still like to go to this. And we're like, no. That is somebody's home. You're allowed to come on the Navajo Nation, but you actually have to stay on the main roads and not just drive off. And because we do get people, you know, tracking their GPS, and in some instances, they go the wrong way. And we have people driving out from so-and-so housing. So we do ask that you do try and stay on the main road.
All right. Thank you for that. And Chairwoman Tucker, any thoughts or just any ground rules just to remind people of?
Well, don't pick things up and take them with you. And one of the big problems that we have here in the southern part of San Luis Obispo County on the coast has been the overgathering of the Pismo clam to the point where we haven't been able to gather clams in many years. And we know that people come by, they see a lot of little baby clams, and their children think they're just innocently picking up seashells. And, you know, they may pick up 200 baby clams that will never now have a chance to become a mature clam. We're not able to clam here now. We don't have the clam population. As a young girl many years ago, clamming was part of our not a daily food that we would eat, but it was common for us to go clamming for dinner. So if you're in an area and you see shells, if you see rocks, if you see limbs, just leave everything alone and leave it in place. And that would be appreciated very much by our tribe if you could do that.
All right. Thank you for that. And you know what? That's going to wrap it up for our program today. Maybe you just got to a point where you wanted to make a comment. Sorry, we're out of time. Our phone lines are closed now, but you can leave your comments on our website. Visit us at NativeAmericaCalling.com. You can even tweet us your thoughts at 1-800-99-NATIVE. We're on Facebook. Just look up Native America Calling and same place, Instagram. Thank you to everybody we heard from, and maybe there are programs that you are running in your community so that tourists do have a better understanding of how to conduct themselves on your tribal lands or in your tribal community. Maybe you want to express some of that. You can also share anything on there, or maybe any ground rules about visiting your area. We know the summer season is still here. Many people have trips planned for the later part. Anything you'd like to tell people who are going to be visiting, go ahead, reach out. And if you have any more thoughts, you can email us too. comments@NativeAmericaCalling.com is where you send that. And thank you to our guest, Sherry Rupert, Chairwoman Olivas Tucker, as well as Louise Sinigini and Sarah Matthewin. And tomorrow, we're going to be live on a remote broadcast from the Rural Networks Conference in Farmington, New Mexico. So when you tune in, you'll hear about broadband internet access in remote areas and more. We look forward to hearing your thoughts on that. Or maybe you have plans to go to this. Come and visit us. We'll be broadcasting live. I'm your host, Tara Gatewood. Thanks again. And please do reach out. Any thoughts on this program, past programs, you can visit us online. NativeAmericaCalling.com.
Program support from AmeriCorps Vista. AmeriCorps Vista members make a difference in the fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining valuable skills. We have rewarding service opportunities around the country, focusing on economic opportunity, healthy futures, education, and more. It will change your life and the lives of others. Information at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA.
Haumi Takia Piki. It's powwow season. Celebrate your culture and your health. Schedule your free wellness visit and keep dancing. Learn more at Medicaid.gov or Medicare.gov or talk to your Indian health provider. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Ho, hechetuelo.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.